characteristics as we do each week, but they also think of this way. I want to be successful in what I do because I want to have the freedom to give. Now, I've identified my wife with this gift. We've talked about this a number of times, and fortunately, we have the same attitude when it comes to finances. I don't know if I have the great gift of giving, but I do know, we avoid debt. We don't have credit card debt. The only luxury we really have is 2 leased vehicles because I don't know how to fix a car, so I don't want anything that breaks down. You don't want me with a tool in my hand, okay? Seriously, I remember one time Megan wanted me to hang a thing in her bedroom, and I came from Michigan. We didn't have, sheetrock or plastic. Like, we had drywall. So you could hang a nail. When you punch a hole in this stuff, it just creates a big, giant hole. I didn't know that. So basically, I farm everything out, and so, but... the thing about it is that's our luxury. We have these nice vehicles, and someday when I retire, I'm going to buy me an old pickup truck and get my hound dog in there and just drive around town. But to me is we love the fact that we have the freedom and to be able to give to charities or give to causes and stuff. In fact, what's joyful about it is, other than a big giant check, if I tell her, come home, she comes to work, and I said, hey, I sent a $100 check to so-and-so or this character, there's never a question because we've created an environment because we like to be able to operate low so we can be able to do things. And that comes a lot from her, and I appreciate that because there's no greater joy than giving. And you don't want the acknowledgement for it, you just want to do it. So I can identify with this gift, even though it's not my strongest one, but because of our teamship in this there. Let's kind of look at Matthew and some scriptures and identify exactly what I'm talking about, his life, and see if you can pick out those things. And then we're going to get into the characteristics. In Matthew chapter number 6, verses 1 through 4, he writes this. And notice the theme or the personality of value, of giving, of stewardship, of being financially or in some ways a hint of making sure check and balance stewardship in how he writes. Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. But when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues or on the streets to be honored by others. Truly I tell you that they receive the reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done, will reward you. Obviously, in the other Gospels, there's not a lot of talk about the giving situation there. In Matthew chapter number 6, verse 19 to 34, we can continue on in Matthew. Do not store up yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up yourself treasures in heaven, where moth and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Very true. The eye is a lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life or what it will eat or drink, or about your body or what you will wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? And I love this whole dialogue here. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns. Yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more valuable than they? Can any one of you worrying add a single hour to your life? Why do you worry about your clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not more clothe you, you of little faith? Do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you have need of them. But seek first the kingdom and his righteousness, and these things will be added or given to you. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And I love that whole passage there because it talks about the fact that, first of all, worrying is not going to change anything. But the second part of that, not only is worry not going to change anything, but that if you seek God's things first, and especially his financial principles, then you're not going to worry about the rest of it. And there's a lot of great financial principles in the scriptures. What's his name? Ramsey, who puts out books on financial stewardship and stuff, using biblical teachings for handling money, which that's what we practice. In the book of Proverbs, it says, don't be a debtor. There are things that we have done to make sure that we are following these biblical principles on finances to be free to be able to do the things we want to do. And I think Tony and them, they had a small group that called Balance just recently. I don't know if you're done with that group or not. Still doing it. It talks about financial management on biblical teaching, which is probably one of the best. I think I went through that one time before and used it one time before. And so, but he puts on here this whole thing about worrying about accountability and about stewardship. And the very fact, listen, the best thing you can do is understand that God's in control of everything. And we have our health today, it could be gone tomorrow. You have a job today, it could be gone tomorrow. And if you really want to be wise, just put yourself in the God's program and be able to say, listen, I just trust him for where I'm going with my life. You want to work your job. You want to do those things and everything else. You want to get a physical to make sure you're healthy. But to be honest with you, everything can change in a moment. So we've gone through times when we didn't have anything. We've gone through times when we had a lot. We've gone through times where we struggled. And the fact of the matter is, at no time ever did we stop giving to the Lord's work or charities. In fact, I will tell you, one of the things that we do is when we get worried a little bit about our finances, one thing we've always done, we've always given away a little more just to challenge God to return it to us. We kind of have the attitude, listen, we're not going to get worried about this. In fact, if anything, we're just going to do a little more because we really feel that he needs to see that we just trust that things are going to work out. And it's always worked out. The last verse I want to read goes on in the book of Matthew chapter 17. Look what it says there. It says, after Jesus and disciples arrived in Capernaum, the collectors of the two darchma tax, temple tax, came to Peter and asked, doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax? Yes, he does, he replied. When Peter came into the house, Jesus was the first to speak. What do you think, Simon, he asked. From what do the kings of the earth collect duty and taxes, from their own children or from others? From others, Peter answered. Then the children are exempt, Jesus said to him. But so that we may not cause offense, go and take and throw out the line and take the first fish that you catch, open its mouth, and you will find four darchma coins, and take it and give it from a tax, from my tax and yours. And what the dialogue was is the tax man was coming, and Peter was saying, we got to pay the taxes, but of course we don't earn an income. We just travel around, you know? But the tax was due. And Jesus gave this dialogue and says, well, should the people inside the family pay the taxes or outside? What he's saying, should only the Roman government pay the taxes? Or should the outsiders, us Jews? And Peter says, I really think the Roman government citizens should pay the tax to Rome. That's their business. And Jesus says, I agree with you. Really, you know, we shouldn't be paying tax to Rome. But Jesus says, so that we're not an offense, though, and cause a problem, let's go out and pay our tax. And, of course, the first thing Peter's saying is, how are we going to do that? And Peter, he says, go out and fish for a fish. And when you get the fish in your mouth, there's going to be the coins in the mouth of the fish. They're going to pay our taxes, just showing a little miracle there. But the interesting thing is that Matthew covers this. He covers this dialogue about paying taxes. And it's interesting, the whole concept there is that you know, to be a good citizen and to do your duty even though you don't like it sometimes. You know, we all don't like paying taxes. I mean, obviously, taxes are a big discussion today in the federal government, whatever. And churches sometimes get into this dialogue. And the federal government and the government talk about, should churches be exempt? Let me make it very, very clear. Churches do not have the right to be exempt. Second of all, by the way, I'm not exempt and Tony's not exempt. We pay income tax on our income. I pay self-employment tax on my housing allowance. The bottom line is we pay our taxes. People always say, I thought you were exempt. No. The church is exempt when the church buys something, but I'm an employee. The thing about it is, it's not a right. It's a privilege. And somebody asked me years ago, so if they ever decided to tax churches, what would you? Would you revolt? And my answer would be, number one, I would trust God, and number two, we'd pay our taxes. Because the bottom line is, I think that, you know, whether we agree or not that charity should or should not or whatever, I will fight, and if I have a vote on something, I will say no to that, because I think it's good for charities and encourages charities. But once again, we follow the laws of the land, and we're, you know, because we want to have a good testimony and good standing, and you know, sometimes there's a time to fight, and sometimes there's a time simply to just follow. And the Scripture teaches about being obedient to the laws of the land. And so that there. But he covers so much of this financial stuff throughout the entire book of Matthew, so he has the gift of giving. And I think a lot of times his motivation is how he's observing how money is handled, how Jesus paid taxes, how, and he gives that whole thing in chapter 6 about, you know, why worry about money, managing money, and, you know, tomorrow will take care of itself. It all has to do with the fact he approaches things from a mindset of value stewardship in finances and those things there, which identifies the gift of giving. As we've been doing the last few weeks, we go through characteristics, misunderstandings, and then spirit and flesh, and we're going to do that again. Let's go over some characteristics of somebody that has the gift of giving, and you can evaluate if this is you. There are 10 of them. I'll go through them as quickly as I can. And I'm trying my best not to cough. I've committed. I have Robitussin in me, you know, and I got a few other things in me. And I've been living on cold medicine for about 7 days now, and it's taking its toll, but I'm getting good with this. So the ability to spend wisely to free up resources to use for God's work. A Christian, a person of faith that has the gift of giving, they think about how they spend money so that they're always prepared to help something. I know a lady that back in the church I pastored in Michigan in the 80s, she would coupon everything. And her husband was kind of like me, that, okay, we make enough and to be able to not worry about couponing. And he asked her one time, she said, why do you use coupons in the store? She goes, because what she does, she goes, I like knowing I can work a system of coupons, and whatever I save each week, she was giving it to the youth ministry at her church. It's like the same thing as saving the Bible. But it was a game for her. When I coupon, it's not to say for me, but if I save $17 this week in coupons, wherever it may be, then I know that's money I didn't spend on something else that I would have, so I can give it away. And I thought that's the kind of person this speaks to here, the ability to spend wisely to free up the resources used for God. Second of all, the desire to give to a worthy project without public notice. And we know many people that way. I'm trying to share some stories from my experience. And in fact, we were talking about the Easter series coming up. It's going to be on stories, because when we were meeting the other day with Creative, they said, my strength is telling stories. So I got a number of stories I'm going to tell you for 3 weeks starting Easter Sunday, stories of Jesus, our lives, us, and others. And so we're going to talk more about that. But the desire to give a worthy project without public notice. Back when I pastored in Michigan, the church I took over pastoring had financial problems. Actually, for 4 churches that I pastored, basically I entered into them because they had financial problems. I came to Connecticut because the church was filing bankruptcy, and someone recommended me that I got one church out of debt, that I'm good basically at doing that. So I came here, and I worked with that church for 6 years, and they were able to get a $1.2 million debt down to $300,000 and eventually burn their mortgage and everything else. And I felt good about that, doing that. When I inherited this church in Michigan, it had debt. It had something like 55 bondholders, note holders, plus a bank mortgage. And none of the bondholders have been paid in a long, long time. So I began to negotiate with each note holder. I started with the big ones first. I set them on a payment schedule, and I set the smaller ones up to pay them off over an 18-month period, and then work with the bank. But we ran into a situation to where we had to come up with about $35,000 in a matter of like 21 days because someone filed something against us. And I didn't want us in the news and all this or whatever, so I just went before the church and said, we're going to figure this out, and that. I got a phone call from a lady, and then this dear lady lived in a small 2-bedroom home. When I went and visited her, by the way, her water heater wasn't working. She was boiling water to take a bath. She was probably in her late, I would say maybe mid-70s. And I'm watching how she lives, and when I went in, she wanted me to come over. I came over, and I said, I'm here, and I won't give her name because I'm recording here. And I said, you know, what can I do for her? When I noticed that, by the way, the first thing I said, I was going to have some of our folks from the church come over and put a new water heater in for you. And we did that in the week ahead after that. But she says, I noticed you mentioned that you needed to be able to fight this thing off. And I've been part of this church since it started in 1964, and I want to help. And I said, well, I appreciate that. I expected her to take a can off the counter and open up and have, you know, $30 in there. She had a bank check for $35,000. And she paid the whole thing off. And I had a hard time accepting that. In fact, before I accepted that, I said I would really feel more comfortable, because she had a daughter and a son-in-law. I would say, I feel more comfortable if you could have them come over. My thought was, I don't want them thinking she gave and I was there or whatever. I felt very uncomfortable. And I also said, I can't receive the check. I will have our chairman of our trustees and our treasurer. You know, we're going to do this a different way, very confidentially or whatever. I was very cautious being in the room with her. You know, sweet lady she is, and I've known her for years. So her daughters, and come to find out, they were happy with it. They, you know, she talked to them. She had more than enough to do this. And I asked him about the water, and they said she just wouldn't let us do anything. Well, I said, well, she ain't going to turn me down. I'm going to come in here, break her door down, put the water heater in, you know. But here's the thing, is she actually lived so humbly, and when the time came, she was able to help her church. And I remember that she lived a few years later. She passed away probably 15 years ago. I got word that she had passed. And even the church back there, she was still helping out doing things at time. But I thought to myself at this point there, the desire to give to worthy projects without public notice. She made it clear, no one will ever know. And I didn't say a word the whole time there. And to this day, I haven't given her name out. Some of my family know, probably my kids know, my dad knows, my brothers know. But that's about it there. So, but I thought to myself, that's what people do. And I've always just trusted God. I told the church, there, God's going to come through. Third, the enjoyment in meeting needs without strong appeal. Somebody with gift of giving doesn't have to be, you know, bullied into doing something for something. They're looking for opportunity. Number four, the desire to urge others to give. Somebody with the gift of giving would make a wonderful treasurer of a church, because they would be sitting there thinking about how can we encourage folks to give and these things there. Number five, the ability to see the financial needs of others may not see. They basically, I mean, they're very good with sitting down with people and giving stewardship counseling about the needs of other people. And they have the ability to see the financial needs that others may not see. Number six, the ability to test others' faith by what they are willing to give. Now, here's the thing. I've been in churches where people think other folks don't lack of faith if they're not willing to give something of greater value. And you got to be very careful there. But they have the ability to test others' faith by what they are willing to give. They can be, and this is we're going to get to the negative side in a second. They can sometimes think that, you know, I'm over here, and that's why no one in a church should know what anybody else is giving. I don't know what anybody gives in this church. I don't want to know. The fact of the matter is that to me is because you can easily think, well, if I'm giving this much, and I know, you know, that we're only having this much come in, that must mean I'm giving the bulk. And so you got to watch out for that. So the next one there is they practice frugality to be prepared to help others. And that's like the lady story I told you about back in Michigan. A joy when they're giving me specific needs. They like being able to say, what is the actual need, and I will take care of that. And I got to tell you, my wife and I have done that. You know, we basically know somebody going through something, and instead of just writing a blank check, we like to know, is there something that we can actually take care of? Because we like to know that we've done that. A concern that their gift is of high value. And they can be irritated by when somebody doesn't give the gift of high value. For instance, back in Michigan, I go back to the church there, we were remodeling our nursery. Because the two places in a church building that ought to have the best atmosphere and the clean is the church nursery and the ladies' restroom and lounge. Because the guys don't care, but, you know, ladies need to have a place to wear. Because, you know, to me, it's always that thought there. But the nursery in any church ought to be that place. So we were redecorating. Well, somebody came in, and they had stopped by a yard sale, and they had pictures, of plaques and stuff of Disney characters. But they were chipped off at the bottom, the reason why somebody was getting rid of them. And I had somebody that kind of went ballistic saying, no, we're not putting this up. We want this to have, we're going to buy new stuff. And, of course, the person over here didn't have the gift to give and said, well, we're saving money. So, you know, and all of a sudden it got into this big debate. And my personal viewpoint is, listen, if we're going to do this right, we're going to buy new stuff, fresh and clean. It's, you know, nothing chipping, nothing breaking off. I don't want something falling on the floor a kid could pick up or whatever. But I thought to myself about this, concerned that their gift is high value. And that's important there. Number 10, a desire to feel a part of something important. People with the gift of giving like to know that whatever they're giving the resource in is making a difference. And by the way, people with the gift of giving can be very helpful with many things in life, whether it's church work or secular works or political work. They're the ones that want to invest in something beyond themselves to help move a cause that they think is important. Misunderstandings. Let's cover those real quick here. They may appear to be more focused on temporal things. What I mean by that is they may see things in solid form. In, you know, what does this do for right now? If we buy this or whatever, they may not be worried about the long-term vision. People with the gift of giving, by giving, people may feel they are seeking control. And every so often, when somebody has a gift of giving, they may be the ones that make, when they're beyond themselves, we're going to talk about the spirit and the flesh, they may be seen like they're trying to be a power broker. And they love giving. They love being the one that when the church is in a bind or an organization in a bind, they write a check to solve the problem. But they may have came off to others as being, well, they're just giving that because they want to control the institution. It may not be their motivation. Most of the time, it's not. They may come off as pressuring others to give. They may be in a meeting where we're trying to raise money for something we're trying to do, and somebody will stand up and say, listen, I'll give $1,000 if five people here will match for $1,000, and then all of a sudden nobody has $1,000, and so they may come off as feeling like, okay, I can't give that amount of money. That's why when we've done building funds before and those things there, you start off by some can give $1,000, some can give $2,500, some can give $50. If you put it all together, we can do an amazing work, but not everybody can give the same. And if you're blessed, then, you know, be charitable with it. And if you're struggling, be charitable, but understand, you know, everybody should give as according to what they can. The key thing is mostly what comes out of the heart. Number four, may shun public appeal that does not match their biblical vision. I had a guy, and I'm a storyteller, so, but back in when I got ordained back in 1982 at Pine Grove Baptist Church in Marshfield, Missouri, the church basically was like 28 miles in the mountains. There was no houses. It was up there all by itself. And I remember that one of the first things that happened is they wanted to buy a piano and organ. And basically we had a gentleman in the church that didn't think that that was necessary. It wasn't the right place to spend our money. And it did not match what he thought was a need, you know, about, you know, music wasn't that important. You know, you don't find music in the New Testament. They sang without instruments. He probably had the gift of giving because he was thinking, we're saving the money instruments and just sing off key. We're fine, okay? And he did, and I remember when it came down to a vote of the church to buy the piano and organ, that the church voted to buy the piano and organ. But here's the funny thing about this guy, and I remember this because I was nervous. I was only about, I don't know how old I was, 24, 25 years old. You know, you're kind of nervous because you're pastoring a church where everybody's, you know, 150 years old or older, you know, and you're dealing with all this pressure because you're trying to lead and stuff. And I remember that after it was all done and stuff, I said, well, now we got to raise the money. You know who the first person was to give the first $100 towards it? That gentleman. And I thought to myself, that's character. Argue your point. Say, but when it's all done and the church has decided, stand up and be part of the team. And I, to this day, I remember that, and I thought to myself, wow, that taught me a lesson about how to handle certain things. So, number five, may appear selfish in areas closer to home. If you're married to someone with the gift of giving, you may get irritated with them because they may spend money doing things for other people, and then sometimes you feel like, well, why don't you do something for us? And that happens with somebody with the gift of giving. Number six, may appear as having low tolerance for the lack of commitment by others. I've seen that for somebody with the gift of giving. And may appear poor while actually having a great resources. And I got to tell you, I've known people that I did not know were wealthy. I told you about the lady back at the church. My dad, who was not only a pastor, but he was a bricklayer, and he laid the brick for Henry Ford Jr.'s house in Detroit, where we live, but also for Kresge, which is Kmart's. And Kresge had a thing to where he lived very humbly. In fact, his goal when he started working his business, that his goal was to get wealthy enough to where he could live on 10% of his income and give 90% away. But he lived so humbly. And I've been around people that, you know, they can afford a 7,000 square foot house, but they have a small house. And I thought to myself, because they want to make sure they're frugal enough to be able to help other people. Let me give you real quick here what they are in the spirit and what they are in the flesh. And I've described it before. It's not really hyper-spiritual and stuff. In the spirit, essentially means I want to do it for the right reason so God will be blessed by it, so I can be a blessing to others. In the flesh, it may mean I'm doing it for my own ego. I'm doing it for my own selfish reasons. Or I just may be, it may be a point to where somebody to get the giving who's trying to be a great value, but they may eventually get irritated with folks that just don't do anything. And then they have to be very careful because not everybody has the same gift. In the spirit, they're going to be thrifty, resourceful. They can be cautious, thankful, and content. And I think the last one is key. They can be very, very content with the little things. And I go back to us, and I don't want to talk about Dawn or me, but here's the funny thing, is I see people that spend a lot of money on things. They charge a lot of things, and then they get depressed. You know, Senator, we've done a lot of work on our house. We did the remodeling. We put central air in last year. We save up for those and pay cash. I'm not going into debt for something like that. And it may take us a year, and sometimes it does. But here's the thing is, you know, we give out our little allowance to each other for the week. And sometimes it's just, here's $20. And by the end of the week, we still have about 12 left. My great joy is grabbing a coffee somewhere. And it's funny how that we really doesn't take a lot to make us content. Content can be is putting one of those fake logs on the fire, which I did last night, and just sitting, you know, watching some of the Olympics. And if MASH is on, I'll watch MASH, as most of you know, okay? Content. I mean, seriously, that's to me, the younger generation, you know, sometimes it's like everything they have and show off to other people is just, please, I don't know. Flesh, covetousness, they'll be wasteful, they'll be unthankful, controlling, unfaithful, and critical. Some of when they get out of the spiritual realm, or they get beside themselves, or they start analyzing too much what's around them, what other folks are doing, man, they can become a little bit critical, and next thing you know is they're not at anything, and if you go talk to them saying, I was helping that church for years and doing stuff, and no one else is doing anything. In the spirit, it shouldn't matter what anybody else is doing. When we're accountable for our own lives, and we have to answer for our own lives, and one of the problems we have here is that people sometimes watch what everybody else is doing, and then they get discouraged or get beside themselves because they don't match up. You know what? Just keep doing what you're doing, and don't worry about everybody else. And the last walk away is something like this. The gift of giving focuses a great deal on the value of their giving and service. Excuse me. So this is the we got two more to go through, the gift of leadership and ruling and organization. I'll kind of tie them all together, and then we're going to do the gift of mercy. But each one of these gifts, and let's kind of real quick for 2 minutes here before I close out. The reason why we're doing this, because everybody here has talents and abilities. You know what you know how to do, but what drives you to do that? I'm driven by a desire not to serve. It's not about service and physical need. It's about encouraging and motivating. And I love it when I teach or do anything I do when somebody finally gets it and says, man, there's no greater joy than look on social media and someone saying, I am really getting this, understanding this whole concept of the gifts. It makes me feel like, okay, I'm accomplishing. Gift of teaching, somebody will say, I'm learning a lot. To me, it's not the learning, it's what you do with the learning that motivates me. And the gift of giving is you're motivated to serve in a church by giving, by value, by stewardship, and you will always try to manage your life to where you can do more, whether it's church or society or charity or whatever. You just have a desire to be able to change the world a little bit and be a better steward and citizen to society. Because you want to help other people. And to me, it's a tremendous gift. It's a tremendous gift. And I know many that have this gift that have made a world of difference in our organization and in organizations I have been involved in. And these are underlying motivations to what we do. And I hope you're enjoying this. So just bow your heads for a moment. We're going to pray, and then Tony and the praise team is going to come and close out.